There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday edition of the show as we've taken Midday Mobile live to Montgomery here for kind of making the turn, playing the back nine, second half of legislative session here on Goat Hill. And a big thank you to Representative Ledbetter as well, whose office we have taken over a portion of. My buddy Jeff Poor from the Jeff Poor Show and Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News in here. Jeff, who is... Let me crash. Last time we crashed Secretary of State John Merrill's office. Now we're crashing Ledbetter's office. Eventually, I mean, we're going to run out of places to stay.
We need to find a governor's office.
Well, that's what I was wondering. As the show intro has the clip, I'm always waiting for the day that Governor Ivey just shows up unannounced and taps me on the shoulder and says, I'm not real happy about my quotes that are in your show intro. This may be the closest I could be to the governor right now, and I'm just waiting for that door to open. And at that point, and then y'all probably split. And so, well, I don't know. Will State Senator Chris Elliott stay in here if the governor walks in there and says, Sullivan, I got to talk to you?
I think she likes the intro. I think it's a great line, and I don't think she's got a problem with it at all.
Well, good. I feel better because I'm really within her grasp right now here in Montgomery. All right, so, yeah, y'all go gavel back in. What time in the Senate today?
We'll be back in at 3:30 this afternoon with a special order calendar that deals with a number of bills, and then probably on to the Education Trust Fund budget later this week, which is really where the rubber starts meeting the road here.
Yeah, that's key to the discussion. Okay, that is key to the discussion. I want to get into a lottery in just a second, but the ETF, I know it seems repetitive, but there's new people coming and going to the listen to the station all the time, and I hope they know that we have two different budgets. We have the general fund budget, and we have the ETF. And we've been talking about this. The ETF revenues come from where?
Sales taxes primarily. I mean, they are growth revenues, if you will.
So economy's good, that budget's better, right?
Correct, correct. So anything that grows with the economy, and of course, we've got a great economy in Alabama right now, and that means that the ETF is up almost a half a billion dollars up this year. I mean, it is big money up. So that's a good thing. It's a good thing for our teachers. We have a 4% raise this year for teachers, which is a good thing. We're behind on that, and we are starting to catch up. It was a 2.5% raise last year for teachers, 4% again this year. And Senator Orr said last week that he anticipated the opportunity for another 4% raise next year. So those revenues continue to rise. Conversely, the general fund budget that funds almost everything else, right?
It's 93% earmarked. Yeah.
Right. It's the roads. It's bridges. It's prisons. It's the courts.
Prisons, yes.
It's the courts. It's those basic functions of government that we have to do. That budget it just stays so flat.
Its revenue sources are the antithesis of the ETF, right?
Correct. It's ad valorem. It's property taxes. It's just as flat can be. And that continues to be the problem between those two budget chairmen is trying to figure out how to address the very real needs we have in the general fund budget while, staying out of ETF's playground, if you will. And that is exactly why you saw the bill come out of the Senate that was cobbled together with just enough votes to pass, right? The 21 votes, just enough votes to pass, that put that money in the general fund budget. It would not have passed the Senate. It would not be available for the people to vote on if that money had gone anywhere else. And frankly, I think if you see a lot of manipulation of the bill that came out of the Senate in the House, that folks will not have an opportunity to vote on the lottery.
And yeah, let's because this has been the discussion I had yesterday. Of course, the detractors over the weekend talking about that money, but I wanted to make sure that we set up beforehand how, because you mentioned ETF and that budget. I will just the fact that I have a chance to say something right here before you go back upstairs to work this afternoon. As the budget for the ETF looks good right now, right? It looks good. Economy's doing good. Eventually, the economy won't be doing so good. And I want those raises for teachers right now. But is there any idea of like, hey, let's pull back and moderate this some so we can have this money going forward? You know, if I could, I would rather be able to give the teachers a 2% raise or 4% raise from here on out than have some problem in 4 years if the economy drops.
And that's very reasonable. There are conversations going on, certainly, and I'm one of those that's having those conversations about making sure that if we are going to spend additional revenue over, you know, over prior year, that it's one-time expenses as opposed to these things that continue to add to the bottom line.
Because what happens when those funds are not
certainly.
So flush?
And that's one of the things that you see specifically in the general fund budget. Senator Chambliss has a bill that's passed the Senate that essentially creates a rolling reserve for the general fund budget. That's
uh-huh.
where some of this lottery revenue is slated to go. That we've been able to do in the education trust fund, but we have not been able to do in the general fund budget. And now, I think with the passage of Senator Chambliss's bill and the fact that the lottery revenue, if it ever materializes, will backfill that plan, will really smooth things out for general fund budget so that we do not have the crises every single year that we seem to deal with.
Okay, I vote for that.
Senator, Senate's been real busy this session, much busier than the House. Are things going to kind of slow down and the House going to kind of start picking up right now? Because traditionally, it's the rush comes out of the House, and then the Senate's where you deliberate, and things kind of slow down. We got to see that kind of change back to normal, you think?
You know, I'll be honest with you. It's my first time up here, and I don't know the answer to that. I do know that the Senate has been very busy. We have been dealing with a lot of heavy issues. There are still some more to come. You know, Sean, you mentioned we're on the back nine of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the back nine, but you know, we still got a lot of work to do, and we're still working on those. I am hopeful that the House will pick up speed. They're going to have to catch up with
right.
just the bills that we've got that are headed their way.
You mentioned this with Chambliss's bill, and this, you know, this is what I felt was unfair, and I took umbrage with it yesterday. Those people that were critiquing this the All Britain bill and the amendments here, saying, well, no money goes to education. No money goes to the ETF. And I think it's a fair discussion of where is the money needed most. I know that as I've made my jokes over the past, I've gotten from folks like me, regular folks, to people that are way up the ladder and knowing what's going on, what I've made my jokes about, hey, we should have a prison lottery. We should have prison license plates, you know, like Helping Schools. We have one called Helping Prisons. People have gotten a big laugh about that, but have said to me at the same time, Sean, there's a lot of truth to that. And I believe it. If the need right now, I'm happy the teachers are getting the raises, and I'm happy y'all are thinking about how do we continue to have the money in the system to continue to pay those raises when times aren't good. But a clear and present problem here, one breathing down our neck, is this possible federal receivership of prisons. And that is something that's a general fund source. If the teachers, God forbid, Lord knows saying this, but if they didn't get a 2% raise next year in addition to the ones they got this year, it probably wouldn't be as big a deal for the state of Alabama as if the feds come in and take over our prison system.
You are 100% right, and there are some very tough decisions being made in the Senate right now by thinkers like Senator Albritton, Senator Chambliss, Senator Ward, who are working very hard on very complicated issues to make sure that we have the money that we need in order to address these problems that frankly have gone unaddressed for so long.
Long time.
That is exactly why we're in the problem that, you know, in the situation that we're in right now, and we are trying very hard to take a very pensive approach to how we deal with very complicated, frankly very expensive problems so that they don't become crippling in their cost if we end up in a federal receivership.
Right. Well, I would rather us avoid this. So really, I'd rather, I mean, and I appreciate it. You haven't been here. This is your first year, but others have. This has not been an unknown. I've been on this for 5 or 6 years, you know, and I'm just some hayseed from Mobile, Alabama. And I've been on this for years. This is coming. This is coming. This is coming. And now here, you know, the wolf is at the door. and you say you're making pensive and taking time making the decisions, that's what should be done over periods of time, not in one given legislative session. I'm glad, and last time I want you to talk about it again, that there's some ideas here short term to give the state, there's a chance to get breathing room, right? If we show the feds we're trying and accomplishing things, didn't you tell me that we can get a little bit of time on this, some more time?
And I think that's exactly what the U.S. attorneys are looking at, and I think they are seeing the responsible approach that's being exhibited by the Senate right now to try to deal with these problems, and I think they're reacting positively to that. And I think that whether or not we have a solution, a permanent solution here immediately, or one that is developed over time, that DOJ and the U.S. attorneys folks are starting to see the decisions being made by the elected officials here in Alabama, many of those that I just mentioned, to really right the ship and head in the right direction and make the decisions we need to with the revenue that we have in order to fix this problem. For all too often, we've been making decisions that just don't fix the problem.
Right.
They may be popular. It may be popular to simply say it needs to go to the kids, it needs to go to the farmers, it needs to go to the children. But at the end of the day, we are addressing problems this session that are crucial for Alabama moving forward. And they are avoiding federal receivership of prisons. They are making sure that we fix our infrastructure problems. I mean, these are tough decisions.
And these are beginning of quadrennium decisions that get made. We're going to run to the break and come back. More with State Senator Chris Elliott, District 32, as we are live. Midday Mobile, we are here in Montgomery, actually in the State House, in Majority Leader Ledbetter's office, and we've crashed it, and we're in the break room, and Jeff Poore's here, and hopefully you as well. 343-0106. Coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, and we are live in Montgomery and live in the State House as well. Talking to State Senator Chris Elliott. Coming up, more of our conversation. Sean Ross from Yellowhammer News will join Jeff and I, and we are once again infiltrating another government office up here. Last time, Secretary of State John Merrill's office. Today, it is Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter's office, and thank you to both of those men and for making some space available for us, and thanks for walking down, State Senator Chris Elliott. We're talking lotto, and we're talking votes that you're now looking at what you did in the Senate. House has got it. Talk about that process, too. House is going to take their votes, and then what happens?
Well, they're gonna look at the bills.
How much changing can they do before y'all?
And that is the million-dollar question. It really is how much change on any individual bill is going to be acceptable to certain senators, and whether or not, you know, that gets resolved through conference, or whether or not that comes back and has to be voted on again in the Senate. And that is, it's really dependent on the bill and the particular issue. And that's going to be the challenge. We were talking about the lottery just before the break, and I think that on that particular bill, there is precious little room to change anything and still get an acceptable vote out of the Senate again. I think
So not much can be done by House members to this that you think that this is going to get signed off on by the Senate. Or it could be changes could be made in the House that will kill it in the Senate, even
Correct.
Though it was voted through earlier.
Correct. And my goal was to get a lottery bill that was the clean lottery. I'm doing air quotes here. But a clean lottery, a paper lottery to the voters so that they could vote on it. Now, the voters can look at it and say, I don't like where it's going, I'm voting no. The voters can look at it and say, I like where the revenue's going, and vote yes. But at the end of the day, my goal was to get something out of the Senate so that was a paper lottery that the voters would have the opportunity to vote on. And the only way it was coming out of the Senate with 21 votes, which was the number required, was for it to come out exactly in the form that it is in right now. Exactly. So we start monkeying with it in the House, and we're going to have a problem in the Senate.
I want to say this, though. There's a chance that one of my jokes ends up being the real thing. And I joke because I think, actually, I was making satire because it's one of the most pressing things we need in the state, and that's funding for the prison issue. We could be kind of having a prison lottery. If this money goes to general fund, the general fund finances ADOC, and therefore lottery dollars could actually go to fund prison. Yeah.
That's correct.
Is that truth?
That is truth.
That's
truth.
Okay.
And it's also true that could fund any other number
of
things.
Sure, it could be. Yes, let's be honest about it. It could fund anything out of the 7%, you know, decisions made in the legislature.
The general fund funds most functions of government that are not education. So when your listeners, when my constituents hear general fund, think government other than education.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's funding.
And this lottery money, after paying back oil and gas, the
right.
Mobile and Baldwin County Trust Fund.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
The MOBOD Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. After the MOBOD Trust Fund, or you probably call it the BAMO
yeah.
Trust Fund,
yeah.
is paid back the 170-something billion, give or take. It's Montgomery. Who cares, right?
Right.
Then there's still money going into it. I talked to Representative McMillan about this last hour. I want to be made whole in that and then continue the revenues coming in from oil and gas that comes through Mobile and Baldwin County. But continuing to put money in there instead of having that go to the general fund.
So
Why is that?
I used the word pensive earlier. I'm going to use the word prudent here.
Okay.
We have some very staunch fiscal conservatives. Senator Chambliss is one of those people that believe that continuing to fund the Oil and Gas Trust Fund, the Mobile and Baldwin County Trust Fund,
yes,
and to continue to put money in that continues to kick dividends out, right? It's
yeah.
Think of it no different than a university endowment, if you will. It continues to act as a revenue source for the general fund moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Chambliss feels, and I tend to agree with him, that is a good way to continue to make sure that the general fund is stable over time and that we avoid this continued crisis-to-crisis jump. So we're trying to
even
that out.
Which is what I want to avoid, too, whether it be funding inside the ETF or the general fund. I want to start. I mean, we have gotten lucky as a state over the last 5 years, whether it be BP money or Mobile and Baldwin County,
sure.
BP money or federal largesse or something. We, in the nick of time, we found the extra $50 bill in our jacket pocket before the lights were turned off.
And this,
I'm tired of that, man. I am tired of it.
And this time it's going to be the lottery if it makes it through. And this time it's going to be a good economy.
One day it's not going to be a good economy.
I am with you. And those are the heavy lifts that we're going to have to make when we start talking about budget reform. I'm on the Joint Budget Reform Committee. Doesn't that sound like fun? to try to deal with some of these issues. Those are the hard lifts. That's the late nights. Those are the big bills,
yeah.
Not the two pagers that you got to go through to try to figure out how do we fix this. And then, frankly, politically, how do you ever get it across the line? Because it is so much easier in this town to keep things from getting done. It is so much easier to do nothing than it is to do something. And that is the most frustrating thing for me. Somebody who I think you would agree is always trying to figure out how to get something done, how to get the ball across the line, is that the default answer in this town is
no.
Is no. Just that it's too hard. Or maybe next year. Or, we just ran out of time.
I want to ask, if somebody did not unplug the clock. I want to ask you specifically, last time you talked about that facility in Perry County.
Yep.
Got to go look at it.
Got to go look at it. 700-bed facility, Raleigh area facility. It is, I mean, you could eat off the floor. It has never been used with the exception of a couple of ICE inmates. It is ready to go.
So there are cells in Alabama that are empty while we are over capacity with DOC.
They're in Perry County, and they're ready to go. And I hope that that is part of the solution to our prison crisis that
short
we have
term.
Right now.
This won't take us 10 years, but you said
right
number
now.
Bed. You could tell the feds, hey, we're doing this.
Right now. And I think that we are fast on our way of integrating that into the solution, the eventual
Good.
Solution that we'll have for prisons here in Alabama.
All right. What other bill? Before we run out of time,
sure.
What else?
I have a bill that I hope will be up either on Thursday or next week. It's called the Protect Alabama Small Business Act. It deals with
franchisees.
Yeah, deals with the relationship between franchisors and franchisees. I used to be a franchisee. Used to own ServiceMaster franchises in Mobile and Baldwin County, so I'm intimately familiar with these agreements and these relationships between big corporate conglomerates like Taco Bell or others, and the small business owners that are actually running the business. The problem is right now these agreements are incredibly lopsided on the franchisor's side.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you have a disagreement with them, it sets venue for suit in some faraway place like New York or Los Angeles. This bill, what it does is it sets venue here in Alabama so that your small business owners here in the state actually have the ability to deal with their franchisor here in the state. It also provides that they can't terminate your agreement just because they've got a brother-in-law they want to put in and take over your business, for instance. And a lot of folks that, you know, the detractors, and I'm a big fan of two sides of both story, right?
Yeah.
Will say, well, you know, didn't you know what you were getting into when you signed that agreement to start with? Well, first of all, it's a 400 or 500 page agreement a lot of times. Not to say that we can't handle complex agreements or that small businesses can't do that, but then it changes sometimes every year. And it never changes in the small business guy's favor.
No, no, no.
It always changes that, hey, if you would like to continue to operate your business, now there's this caveat.
Right.
And a year later, now there's this caveat.
Sure.
And before you know it, those small businesses are trapped. And that's why you have all of these folks from around the country, from Papa John's and hotel owners, Buffalo Rock, Moe's and Bojangles and Service Master and Burger King and Popeyes and, you know, Rayford and Associates in Mobile.
Right.
That support my bill and know that we need to have some parity and some equity for our small businesses.
This comes up next week, you think?
Should come up either Thursday or Tuesday. So the end of this week or beginning of next.
All right, we'll talk about then. State Senator Chris Elliott, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us.
All right, coming right back, more Midday Mobile. We are live from the State House here on FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live on this Tuesday from Montgomery. Also, my friend Jeff Poor from the Jeff Poor Radio Show and Yellowhammer. And you can catch him every afternoon. Well, you start up at, right after this show. That's
really
right.
In about 25 minutes.
They said, no way are we going to put head-to-head programming, Sean and Jeff. So the Muckety Mucks in Huntsville said he'll come on it. There was some other reason, but we'll forget about it, that you come on at 2 and I come on at noon.
So Phil Valentine decided
that's
to
right.
desyndicate his show.
That's what was it? Don't tell people. Oh, that's the truth. But yeah, y'all check it out on WVNN.com. And of course, Jeff and his work in Yellowhammer. Speaking of which, talking about Yellowhammer, Sean Ross from Yellowhammer, in studio, but in our temporary studio here in Nathaniel Ledbetter's office, we have crashed yet another office in Montgomery. Last time it was Secretary of State. Now it's the majority leader.
Good to have you all in Montgomery.
It's, yeah, man. We're back, man. Yeah. We're back.
It's my second home here.
Y'all brought the heat with you, too. I don't really appreciate that, but it's all right.
It's supposed to be, I brought it. Yeah, I don't know if Jeff brought it down or I brought it up to Montgomery.
Brought it up from the Gulf.
Yeah. Which is like big south wind brought the station up here. Uh-huh. Talk to us about, first of all, what you're doing day in, day out. When I've seen you here, you're in the House, you're in the Senate, you're watching what's happening here.
Yeah, I'm just running up and down stairs pretty much, there's a lot going on that you don't hear about. I mean, today, obviously, the big headline is there's an abortion bill on the House floor, but
right.
There's a lot more going on that is probably much more important, to be honest, on the same day. So
right, because you can fill that in, but you're saying important because this bill is going to go through. It's going to make it through here in Alabama, mm-hmm. and we're one of six or seven states doing the same thing. So this is going to happen. So those that say, well, this is the most important, that's fine. It's getting done. Mm-hmm. But the things that don't catch the headlines in a lot of places, that's what y'all go after with Yellowhammer. That's what you're looking for.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the Education Trust Fund budget, for example, is in a Senate committee right now, actually, you know, the same time the House gavels in. I think they do that on purpose. But I mean, there are things that are going to affect people's wallets, and this abortion bill, like you said, it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, it's going to happen anyway. So the votes are there. So, yeah, let's talk about the things, not to discount the other, but let's talk about the things and that's one of the things that Jeff and I were just sitting, and we're talking to Senator Elliott, and he seems to be getting it. I hate this idea that we go, man, things are good. ETF is flush. As much as I defend, I'm the guy defending the idea that the lotto funds no direct ETF, but I'll get to that in a second. But people say, no, the ETF is flush right now. Revenues are up. Economy is good. Eventually, eventually the economy is not going to be good.
Yeah.
I hadn't been on the planet yet 50 years, and I've seen turns in the economy. It's going to happen again. So I want raises. I want the best for our teachers and best for education in Alabama. I also don't want to hear in 5 years we're at a a situation where we don't know what to do. We don't have any money. Today's the day. This is when you deal with rainy day. You don't deal with rainy day on the rainy day. You deal with it when the sun shines.
That's right. That's right. And I think they're taking some small steps, at least on the general fund side. You know, they're trying to create a real reserve fund for the general fund. And actually, Senator Allburton's bill would actually, you know, obviously it's putting money in the Alabama Trust Fund. Now, you have to, it's almost impossible to get money out of the Alabama Trust Fund.
Well, they got 170-some-odd million out there.
Oh, they've got plenty of money in there. It's just a matter of it never comes out, really, once it goes in. So,
but I would say, wasn't the payback is 170-something million because that was taken out.
That's right.
So they did get into it.
Yeah,
that's and right. And the idea of having, you know, working off the interest versus wearing down the capital is a smarter idea. I don't know if you could run the ETF like that or something. I'm very happy that the teachers that need to get the raise are getting the raise. Mm-hmm. I just also want to make sure, because he said, and we may be able to give them another 2% next year and more. Can we live up to that obligation when times aren't good?
Right, right.
And that's what and you watch them. Are they addressing that? I mean, they got to be eyes open about that. And
you know, one thing the House Education Budget Chairman Bill Poole is trying to do, and he's been trying to do this for a couple years and it never goes anywhere. He's trying to take the budget process to a biannual process, so they budget 2 years out.
I like that. People act like that's like a step, like a 5-year Soviet plan. Y'all tell me why I'm wrong. I like that biannual budgeting. Why am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong necessarily.
I mean, don't you make better decisions like that now?
If you plan ahead, yeah. But I just think you have lawmakers that don't really view their job as they're more appropriators, and that you kind of play the hand you're dealt at that moment in time.
But you may not.
I'm not saying it's right.
Right. No.
But I'm saying that's their perspective.
Sean, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the problems are more political than policy for that legislation. Probably, I think you have a lot of people who, you know, like the pork, whether it's a grant of some kind or not. I think it just makes it easier for them to come and demand that on a come as you will basis instead of every 2 years, because they're not really looking to, you know, plan ahead with that kind of thing. They want it now.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I think that's a large part of it. Look, I mean, Bill Poole is, I haven't seen him be wrong on a policy issue in my mind. I mean, the guy's very well respected here, and I think it goes to show that, you know, there are just some political factors working against him on this one.
What kind of discussion upstairs are they having on, if any, Medicaid expansion?
I don't think any. I haven't heard any, at least. You know,
because that was one of, you know, kind of going into session, we're going to talk about infrastructure gas tax increase. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about prison reform. You know, we're talking about the lottery, and we're talking about Medicaid.
The only one I've heard talk about it, Anthony Daniels, the minority leader in the House, has talked about Medicaid expansion. And he did I was up at Huntsville, he did a town hall with Laura Hall, and he told those constituents of his up there that, look, we're in the minority. We're mm-hmm. in the super minority.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to play along with this gas tax. But that will give us an opening to push Medicaid expansion and save these rural hospitals and help our fellow Democrats throughout the state. Because that district in Huntsville, although it's Democrat, it's doing all right economically. It's the other Democratic districts that are really struggling for the most part. And that was what he was explaining, why Medicaid expansion could come to. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. But at least that is what they're telling people.
You know, I've been left and scratching my head because you'll see one argument and one data set mm-hmm. that'll make it look like, yeah, this Medicaid expansion, this makes sense. And then I read an opposing, I'm trying to keep an open mind, I read an opposing opinion, because my normal default as a fiscal conservative is no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I try to make sure I'm open-minded and look at it. And they make this argument, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And then I read something else that says, based on those same numbers, no, it could be a disaster.
Well, they're going to have to get relief from the federal government, I think, to get in that, the Medicaid expansion game. The problem is, all these other states that surround Alabama, or not all of them, but a lot of them, have gone that direction already, right? So the problem is, you're not really dealing with a fair playing field, and that's what's is that so much the hospitals that are closing because of two reasons: the population's leaving, and the economy there is not really sustaining them. And the other reason is the people that work there could go work at other hospitals and other places because they took the federal money, and they're able these other states or the hospitals these other states are able to pay a little bit more. So the problem is you put the Alabama hospitals at a real competitive disadvantage. So, in a way, Alabama's being pushed in that direction just because of the economy, and the economy's a scale.
Gotcha.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So,
yeah.
that boxes the state of Alabama in a corner, and they got to think of a way to deal with that. And it may come to the point where they're just going to have to go along with everybody else because everybody else has already gone along with it.
We're close to the break here, but I want to set this up, and we'll talk about this more on the backside. And talking about a story over at Yellowhammer about Senator Jones and his belief that, you know what, the census really is to count, let me put it in some Sullivanese, everybody and not just citizens. And it's... I think this gets to it. I mean, it's a couple. There's an idealistic question here, don't you agree? And a pragmatic question. Idealistic question, right, is what do we think the founders wanted? What is the spirit of that? Is this about just human beings that are there, or is it about people that need to be represented because they're citizens? And then there's just a straight pragmatic. Alabama could lose a congressional district, right, Sean? I mean, we could have, you know, a diminished voice in Washington. We already don't. You know, have the biggest voice in Washington. I'll say the Senate thing has been a good thing for us for a long time, but in the House of Representatives, we don't have the biggest voice.
Absolutely, and it's not only
smaller,
not only representation, but federal funding formulation too. So.
Yeah, explain that based on congressional districts is a default way to say what your population is. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that means what you get in tax dollars coming back home to Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's some things that are just strictly based on population. So, you know, the more out of proportion our population is to bigger states.
Population of what? People or citizens, Sean?
Well, it depends who you ask.
All right. We'll run to the break. We'll come back and talk more about this. Phone number is 343-0106. Works for the text line. Tell you what, send us a text, and we'll talk about it when we get back. We are live in Montgomery with Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. And we are live in Montgomery as they are, I guess, it looks like, what, the House? I can find out. I got Sean Ross from Yellowhammer News and Jeff Poore from the Jeff Poore Show and Yellowhammer. So their House is gaveled back in. They're back to work?
Yep, they are back to work.
Thank goodness. I've been waiting around for them to get back to work. And Senate this afternoon will get back to work. And it is kind of the second half, the back nine of the legislative session. But that doesn't mean the issues are easy because there's a whole bunch of them that have a lot of attention out there, and there's some that don't have as much attention, but maybe even more important. So that's part of this discussion as well. Lotto has everybody, you know, a lot of people talking lottery.
Oh, yeah.
Lotto fever out there. But some of the other things, too, and I want to get off on this this Senator Jones thing for a second here. It's and I would get y'all to score it. To me, you pull out maybe two things that are very big to Alabamians. You pull those things out, and I mean his stance on abortion and Second Amendment.
Right.
And if you pull those out, you know, I mean, it's kind of what I would expect from a Democrat elected in a red state.
Besides the Kavanaugh vote. The Kavanaugh vote. Killing him.
That's right. But there's been, I can balance it out with other votes where he's, you know, so, mm-hmm. I mean, he has acted like, okay, I'm going to try to play this closer to the center. Mm-hmm. But then he comes out. This one is not even, I can argue, political, even though it is. It's also jingoistic. And there's something in politics. You got to dance with the people who bring you.
Yep.
Right? You got to be, even if you're a Democrat or a Republican, you got to be an Alabamian. You got to cheer for your people. If the football game, I don't care what party you're on, when it comes to national championship time, there's a team from Alabama playing and there's a team from Carolina playing. I don't care what party you are. You make the bet. Yeah, well, we bet you we're going to beat, right? That's how it's played. That's the game. In this, I kind of feel like what Senator Jones is saying about this census thing strikes me the same way. Why wouldn't he? And I get the big political field, but you know what? Democrats are allowed to take votes that don't follow the party orthodoxy if they think they're going to be able to hang on to a seat in a state that they don't usually have a seat in.
Yeah, yeah.
This idea about census data, where not only is it a political play, it is pragmatically, we lose Democrats in the state of Alabama, will lose a voice, and will lose federal dollars because of people that are not citizens being counted in the census.
Right, and I think an additional layer that people were really frustrated about was Senator Jones' claim that counting everybody, including illegal aliens, would help the state.
It's wrong.
That's just a lie.
Well, even if it was, I would argue with the idealism of that that's wrong, because my belief, and we'll see what those way up the food chain for me think, but I got to feel the idea of the founders was the census. If we're going to apportion representation based on the census, you don't represent people that aren't citizens. The formula is you represent citizens. So why would it would be to count citizens, not to...
And they got to... So they got a lawsuit that Mo Brooks and Steve Marshall have about that issue. That is the issue.
But right now... Two other states or three...
Meantime, the idea is, well, should the question be on the census?
Right, these two things are kind of running concurrently.
They're running concurrent, but there's two separate things.
Agree.
So, but to know how many people are here legally or illegally, that question has to be on the census, so you have an accurate count, or as accurate, as truthful as people want to be, right?
Right.
And then later on, when that is adjudicated, whether it's a citizen or a non-citizen question, you have that data. So the fight right now, just to leave the question off the census, and then if it does turn out that the Supreme Court rules, well, we're not going to count illegal aliens, or we're not going to count those here illegally or that aren't citizens, then...
And that's the one I'm focused on more, because that's when I think, even though they're both connected,
but
obviously they're conjoined.
You got to know what that number is. But then that's 10 years down the road, because we won't have to address that again until the 2030 census.
I'm trying to fight right now
to
make sure
we
keep seven congressional districts.
You got to have that question right now on the census.
Without the question, we're going to lose the seat.
There you go.
It's that simple.
Yeah. And that's the point, because... If
the apportionment won't happen until after the census.
Correct, but it's based on what happens in the census.
But you got to have that question on, and then you decide.
But so Doug Jones says, Senator Jones says, I mean, what he's saying is, to me, is it's back to this betting on the football game, the national champion. It's not even it's specifically because Democrats in the state of Alabama will lose out if we have less represent. What is more important, this question of should they dare ask on the census this question, or does his home state that has Democrats in it get less representation?
I just can't find any logical reason for what he's doing. And
seems like this would be the easiest one for him to try to come out, break from the party, show, going into 2020 cycle, showing that I'm different. I'm not like the National Democrat Party that I show myself to be like a lot. But I'm not like them. I'm different. I'm an Alabama Democrat. I'm different. I'm working towards... I'm for Alabama representation.
Well, if he's playing the long game, then it benefits him, because he'll be in the Senate for six more years. Let's assume he gets elected, which is a far reach, but maybe in his mind this is how it's played out. He gets reelected, and then this just strengthens the Democrat majority, which he'll be a part of that caucus.
Strengthens it in what? In less, so Democrat before, even though Alabama will have less.
I mean, it'll be the House, obviously, but he'll be, it'll be a Senate counterpart to it. And they'll, you would think that Pelosi, Schumer, or whoever it is that is leading those two caucuses in each of the respective chambers will kind of work together, and it'll just benefit him and make him more.
But he's going to be more important as a senator, because our representation in the House is going to diminish by
our
district.
Or it makes the Democrat representation stronger
as a percentage, but not really.
Well, but they'll be steering. It could sway the House one way or another, possibly. If you have more states with more Democrat votes, and you have more Democrat districts like California, and you take them away from Alabama, then the chances are you're going to have a better, stronger majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives. Therefore, you take that, and you have a Democrat-controlled Congress, and you have a Democrat
player. It's better for Democrats in Alabama by having having Democrats control in Washington, having it...
the way Doug Jones would see it is, I'm a player in this Democratic apparatus. It's better for me for the state of to help the state of Alabama.
I think the question he's answering is what you kind of referred to earlier, Sean, was where do his true loyalties lie?
Yeah.
And I think on one hand you have the Democratic Party, the other hand is the state of Alabama, and he's not choosing the state of Alabama.
It doesn't seem, and it seems like in this case, there's sometimes he's had to take a vote. I go, ooh, man, you know, this is a tough one. But Jeff is talking about it like y'all are on maybe a level higher than me. I'm very down in the ditch on this. But it's such an easy, like, I could make the argument as an Alabamian first. I mean, I think it's low hanging fruit that I'm going to oppose this, and I'm going to take this one lead from the National Democrats. Y'all, I'm going to oppose you on this because I believe that all Alabamians, Democrats and Republicans included, need to have as much voice in Washington as possible. That's why I'm saying you got to ask this question. We only can decide that citizens, be they Democrats or Republicans in Alabama, get to have be counted when we apportion representation.
But I'm not agreeing with his ahead. Philosophy.
No, you're laying out the case.
If he's still senator, for some reason he gets reelected and he's part of that Democratic structure, and Democrats are calling the shots in Washington D.C., then in his mind he's able to wield more influence as a Democrat member with a Democrat majority than he is a Democrat member with a Republican majority.
And I see what you're saying. But just in, you know...
It's crazy land.
It is, but
Doug Jones,
I challenge you to come up with a... You did.
That's the best I can... If you're playing, like, 50 yards down the field, right?
Right.
Another theory, he really just doesn't care, and he wants to be Joe Biden's attorney general, and, you know, this is his way of showing his true colors.
I haven't heard that yet, but...
Now, what is
he wants to be the Jeff Sessions? He wants to be the Jeff Sessions of the Biden administration.
So, Sean Ross, Yellow Hammer News, you're breaking this here that maybe this would be the AG for Sleepy Joe.
I don't know. You know, it would fit, huh? Look how quickly
he was a U.S. attorney.
Look how quickly he scrambled out there to get that endorsement out. I mean, you know, previously he said, "Look, Joe Biden's my friend. I've made no bones about that. But we have a great field." I mean, he didn't even wait 2 hours before he, you know, came out with that lame tweet. I mean, he could have at least waited to do something a little more impactful.
And he says that Biden came and campaigned for him, but so did Cory Booker, so did Kamala Harris in that 17 special.
Yep.
By the way, if you had to call Vegas, y'all, and put odds on Joe Biden being that not who would challenge President Trump the most in the general, but who has a chance of getting through the primary process, what would he give that horse?
30%.
Jeff?
Maybe a little higher, but not quite to 50 yet.
Yeah. So there, I mean, and I don't think we've heard all the names that'll possibly continue to pile in the Democrat field. I don't know if they take away from Biden or one of the 36
others. I think it's Bernie
and
Biden right now. I think everybody else is playing for something else.
Until Hillary Clinton announces, Jeff.
Sean is two hot takes. I love it, man. Sean Ross, yellowhammernews.com. Jeff Poore, of course, from WVNN. And the Jeff Poore Radio Show starts next, so I got to be quiet here. Paul Feinbaum starts on our station next, right here on FM Talk 106.5.